from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We are headed into our 7 o'clock hour, and it is brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. SEC Media Days kicks off today, and of course, SEC Commissioner, as always, Greg Sankey, will get it started this morning with his annual press conference, and that is before LSU opens things up for the rest of the preceding teams. Two-time national champion, you guys know him here, Kirby Smart. He headlines a stack day two on Tuesday, while Kalen DeBoer makes his debut opposite Texas coach and ex-Alabama assistant Steve Sarkisian. That will go down on Wednesday. This goes over a four-day span. And yes, they like to call it a media car wash, but a lot to look forward to, and probably a lot of news coming out this week.
So many side stories and so many, Tiff, as they call it in the business, nuggets that will probably land on some
nuggets,
you know, on some very thirsty fans out there in SEC land for some of the things going on. I was looking at the players that are becoming, obviously Kirby Smart showing up with Carson Beck, Michael Williams, and Malachi Starks. And I was like, how nice must it be to roll up with, you know, let's call it three of the top 40 players in college football this year, you know, just walking in there. When you look down at some of the other teams, you're like, man, that must be, must sound like an uphill battle. But I said it a minute ago when we were talking about that. I mean, it is what it is. When I look at these teams and look at these rosters and look at the way they're all put together, obviously Kirby Smart roster far and away exceeds mostly anything going on in college football, and he continues to do those things. But I will be curious to hear Kirby Smart's message, because he has used this platform in the past to challenge his team. He has become a master motivator. I went through all of those things with Saban for a number of years, where he would use this as a platform to kind of jumpstart what he wants his team to look forward to and what the challenges are and things like that. I'm sure that will come out for a number of teams, but Kirby Smart, listen, he's the czar of college football right now. It is what it is. Kirby Smart is that guy, and Georgia fans should be proud of that.
Well, they're not proud of the ridiculousness that keeps coming out of Athens with their players and how they drive. Yeah, he's going to get asked about it again.
Yeah.
Because they've done nothing, seemingly done nothing to stop it, because it's continuing to happen. And but I will say this, all that said, I know that Kirby Smart will have a much more much better statement than Mike Gundy did.
Dude, I was thinking the same thing.
He'll be able to handle it much better.
Just don't take the Gundy approach, that's all.
I've done that like 1,000 times.
That's a quiet part out loud, that old Gundy.
Well, I thought Rusty Mansell, who obviously was at the steakhouse every Wednesday, was like, hey, that was his too cool for school moment. And it was. You were trying to not crush the player, because I thought it was a good decision to make the player still come to the media days last week, which was Ollie Gordon, who, by the way, is a Heisman Trophy candidate, just like Carson Beck is. Look, there's some star power when you're going to talk about players going to the SEC, because might not really think of one, but I think Nussmeier coming with LSU is going to be a very good player this year. Jackson Dart today will be there with Ole Miss. But then you look down at Kirby Smart. You said three of the top 100 players. Maybe the Heisman Trophy favorite in Carson Beck. And, oh, by the way, when Alabama brings Jalen Milroe, and the same day, Texas is bringing Quinn Ewers. I mean, those are also guys that could compete for the Heisman Trophy.
Quarterbacks, yeah.
So, star power is definitely there. I mean, then you kind of get to the last day and you're like, oh, look, Auburn's bringing Peyton Thorne.
Listen, man.
Don't poo-poo on those kids.
I have a healthy respect for most Auburn fans. They're going to be excited about Hugh Freeze and Peyton Thorne. That's not a bad combination.
Do you really?
A healthy respect?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I do. Have y'all ever heard me get on here and trash Auburn for any reason?
No, because you probably think you're better than them.
Well,
you
went to Alabama. I'm sure you probably think.
No, Tiff, no matter how much you would like to generalize my personality, I do not think I'm better than Auburn fans. Shockingly.
Well,
no, I do not.
Most of the people that you're friends with.
Better than Auburn.
Think about ask yourself this. How many people out there think they're better than Alabama fans?
A lot, probably. Yeah. You have never trashed Auburn on this show.
Thank you very much.
I'm just having some fun. You don't speak of them, you know, when you're at the top or you've been at the top, you know, you probably someone may ask you about them, you'd be like, oh, I'm not even worried about them.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe.
See,
that's
see?
What it is.
I think I'm better than most people from that state.
I think it's
I don't think that needs to be said out loud. I think that's saying the quiet part out loud.
Oh, you said you're better than everybody from Alabama?
Yeah.
That
what do you think it
you're
is?
You're from Alabama. You could call in on the wake up call.
What do you think it is that separates you from most people now? I just curious.
Well,
yeah, Paulding County
class to begin with, but
what are we talking? I'm about to fall out of my chair.
The best part is if anybody is listening in the fantasy NASCAR league that I'm a part of, most of the people there are either Alabama fans or from that region of Alabama, Florida, the panhandle kind of thing, I guess what you call it right there. Mm-hmm. It is going to light up very, very quickly.
Yeah,
I just said they could all call in. For the wake-up call.
No, thanks.
No, a couple of them don't need to call in. No. A couple of them need to they're restricted from making it onto the air.
Well, I mean, look, back to the SEC Media Days things. You guys were talking about it earlier and talking about how that's a media scrum, the car wash tip. Is this the first year it's been 4 days? I can't remember.
No, it's always been
4 days.
When they went to 14 teams originally, because it's 16 now, they went to 4 days.
Okay. I could not remember the length of it. I just remember distinctly going into room after room and thinking, there's another room like this? Radio row, and then you do the whatever podium they want you to go at, and then you sit in one corner and somebody sits opposite. But I was there on the day that Tebow was there, the famous Tebow SEC Media Days that things lit up, which irritates me to no end still to this day. But then you go to, like, the CBS part where they're filming something for maybe their intros or something to be used at a later date. And then you go into another part where it's like ESPN radio, and maybe this people want you a live interview with this in Birmingham and this. Like, I don't know that I have been more exhausted, maybe possibly just after a football game. Like, that's what it felt like after just eight hours being in a suit.
For a player, and anybody, when you're going through a day like this and you're having to talk to different media outlets, and from the player perspective, you're likely getting asked these same questions by different outlets over and over and over again. So you have to put on the brave face, so to speak. And it is what it is for the day. On the media side of things, I can tell you I've done Big 12 media days. It is probably not almost exhausting as it is for the players. But you're exhausted. You're talking to all these different teams. You want to cover your home team.
Only one day. The media is...
You're there.
Yeah. The whole time.
Because it's the conference, right? So you might want to run stuff because maybe your opposing coach is talking about your local team. And it's like, all right, we're here all 4 days of this thing.
I will tell you that SEC Media Days...
The beast.
The Radio Row SEC Media Days is the only event that I liked less covering as far as... How, as a producer back then, as hard as, basically as taxing as it was Super Bowl Radio Row, which were, if you're there for a whole week at Super Bowl Radio Row, it's taxing. Because the Radio Row at the SEC Media Days for the radio, they don't care. Like, all ACC, they'll bring you every player and every coach. They treat the radio part of it just like they do the TV room and the print room and all those things. When it comes down to... The SEC, they don't. And it's like, and it used to be, when a lot of times when it's out there at the Winfrey, when it's in Hoover,
yeah.
you're in a, basically a hall that connects the mall to the hotel.
Yeah.
And they don't bring anybody. You have to go upstairs. So you're constantly going up. It is absolutely a taxing event where you are exhausted after every day. And after the 4 days is over, Then you got to make that track back down I-20, and you're like, hell, just get me home.
Yeah.
Get me. This is awful.
Quick lay of the land for today. You have LSU again kicking things off after the commissioner does his address, followed by South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt. Tuesday, it's Georgia, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Missouri, and why not? Hey, on Wednesday, Alabama, Mississippi State, Florida, Texas, and finally, on Thursday, you got Arkansas, Texas A&M, Auburn, and lastly, Kentucky.
Yeah, I obviously, it's like Bo said a minute ago, seems like Tuesday probably the best day when you look at the coaches, when you look at the personalities, when you look at Kirby Smart coming in. I will be, obviously, for obvious reasons, interested to see what Kalen DeBoer sounds like. But even removing myself as an Alabama grad, I think a lot of people will be paying attention to Kalen DeBoer and really the absence of Nick Saban and what that kind of sounds like. Also, Steve Sarkisian, his first time. Billy Napier, unfortunately, Squid, he's got a lot of questions to answer this coming football season about where they're going to be and what kind of team that's going to be. But he brings Graham Mertz with him and Shamar James. So,
yeah,
I'm excited to see these guys, but just for the simple fact that I feel like now starts the clock ticking towards week one.
You mentioned Billy Napier being there. I actually feel a lot better about the Florida season coming up after reading the Phil Steele preview.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Make you feel good?
Phil made me feel better because I got my Phil Steele Friday. I was like, you know what?
Why did you not feel good?
Because it's the toughest college football schedule I have ever
seen. Of all time.
Their November, Tiffany, is basically the college football playoff. I'm telling you,
they have six top 10 teams from last year's poll.
Listen to this, because of it, they are way down.
He said college football playoff. They also have Florida State. I know that pushes some people's buttons, but it is what it is. They weren't in the college football playoff.
But we're not.
You know, 4A.
So listen to this. They open the season against Miami at home, and then they get their easiest game of the year is Samford, and then it's Texas A&M at Miss State by UCF, which is no pushover. I mean, let's be honest. Tennessee at Tennessee, then Kentucky. Then it is Georgia and Jacksonville on November 2nd, at Texas November 9th, LSU at home November 16th. Mississippi, November 23rd, and then you got to go to Tallahassee and play Florida State. So you've got number one, the consensus number one team, which will be Georgia. Then you got to go on the road to Texas, which is penciled in as a college football playoff team with returning a lot of players. And oh, they were last year. Then you've got to play LSU, which is no easy task. Mississippi, who is projected to be in the playoff. And then at Florida State. Yeah, that sounds awesomely fun.
Do you the over-under, I think, is 4.5 for them?
Five and a half. I saw 5.5 somewhere.
I think it opened at 4.5, and I kept thinking, I'm not touching that, man.
At 5.5, I'll take the under because they might win 5 games. They might win 4. They might win 3 games.
And
it sucks because this is the biggest year of the Billy Napier era. He's had a couple of recruiting cycles. They do have DJ Lagway, who is a true freshman who could be the next quarterback there. And if you fire Napier, what happens to Lagway? You know, you're going to start the season probably with Graham Mertz. I mean, I would assume. I don't know. It's a big year for one of Georgia's rivals.
Well, this Falcons player has a lot on his plate, but it's nothing he can't handle. We'll find out from offensive coordinator Zach Robinson just what exactly is in store for one of their star players. Stay with us. We're coming right back here, going in the huddle, next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning. Back to more of the morning shift
with Tiffany, Mike, and Bo on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's time to huddle up.
Bring it in close. Bring it in close.
The latest NFL news, rumors, reports, and happenings
with In the Huddle, brought to you by the Good Feet Store Premium Art Supports. Learn more at goodfeet.com on the morning shift.
We are going in the huddle, and Falcons offensive coordinator Zach Robinson, well, he talked to D. Orlando Ledbetter of the AJC, and he had this to say about Kyle Pitts. He's basically learning two different positions. There's some tight end and there's some receiver, so he's got a lot on his plate. He's handled it really well. I'm just excited to see him continue to get more comfortable in the system. So,
well, look, we'll talk to Uncle D coming up at 8:20. You know, people love D-Led, as the beat writer and the award-winning beat writer of the Atlanta Falcons here for the AJC, so we'll talk to him about that interview. But a little bit of insight, I guess, but I don't think there's anything reading the article that stuck out to me as surprising. I think it's just nice to see these guys all start to settle in. I mean, I don't even know that we've gotten to a point in this room, maybe on the station, where it sounds normal saying OC Zach Robinson and head coach Raheem Morris and all those things. It's just starting to be real because we are inching towards training camp, thankfully. And have a lot of that to look forward to. But nothing shocking, I think, from a lot of this. Just a lot of good insight.
No, it was good. And we know that Pitts is feeling a lot healthier than he did last season. And that was according to tight ends coach Kevin Cogger, who did talk to Orlando as well. Or D-Led, I should say. But he did say this. He said there were some things, and even he will probably tell you, that he didn't feel 100%. But Kyle is a tough kid. He wasn't being the type of guy, well, no, I can't play. If he was good enough to play, he was going to play. I think that some of that was coming off that knee and him not feeling too confident in putting that foot in the ground and being able to change direction. So, Cogger also saw a lot of progress in the offseason. But, yeah, you hear that from a lot of guys after coming back, and girls too. When you're coming back from an ACL injury, you know, it's kind of, you have to wait for that first hit to happen, that first plant to happen, or that first cut to happen for you to feel really good. And sometimes it's a mental hurdle that you have to cover, and it doesn't come right away for everybody to feel comfortable. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I think he played a lot of receiver in the first year under Oscar Smith. So, he's not unfamiliar. I think it's just the offense, and it's the new offense, and some of the things they're going to want to do. I think they're going to try to feature him in a multitude of ways with routes. I do see them working back in, you know, the little shallow drags where you kind of get him in space and let him try to turn up field and honestly just go. But I thought it was interesting, and I'm going to ask D-Led when we have him on at 8:20 about it, is that I wonder how affected he was when the loss of Matt Ryan, because this offense in 21 was completely different than it was the other 2 years under Arthur Smith. And it was much more open, and Kyle Pitts was a much better player when he had an effective quarterback. In the last 2 years, he hasn't had that, injured or not. He has not had that.
Well, I think to me the biggest kind of takeaway, or at least statement, comes from the tight ends coach Cogger, and he says that I think some of it last year, coming off the ACL, unplanned change of direction, right? We talk about change of direction, but there is a difference in knowing I'm about to cut in a route and knowing it's coming and having somebody jump in front of me and me having to react, right? So unplanned change of direction is me kind of the biggest takeaway from that, but I'm with you. I want to ask D-Led about that as well, because I don't know that I've been as hard on anybody in the Falcons uniform as I was on Kyle Pitts last year. And it's because at times the effort seemed to be lacking. There were times he looked like maybe he was hurt, but there are other times he just looked disenchanted with what his role was.
And
so
I wonder,
curious to see how that turns out.
But how much of that is not feeling right, and how much of that is frustration with not only the play calling but the quarterback as well? Because there were a couple of times where the balls were overthrown, but I was like, yeah, but maybe you could have laid out for that, you know, or maybe you could have, you look like you pulled up, or maybe not being on the same page. I don't know, but there was it was clearly not 100%, and there was clearly some disenchantment with what was happening on that field with him and the quarterback
His
play
role.
Call.
Yeah, I agree.
This from ESPN senior national NFL reporter Jeremy Fowler. And ESPN surveyed league executives, coaches, and scouts to help them rank the top 10 players at 11 different positions, from quarterback to cornerback and everything in between. We talked about this in the previous week where I believe we were highlighting, what was it last week?
Oh, we
Jesse Bates, right?
Yeah,
safety position.
Yes.
So now we're talking about the offensive line, and Chris Lindstrom is ranked number 2 in interior O lineman by NFL execs, scouts, and coaches. So he's behind Zach Martin of the Dallas Cowboys, Quentin Nelson of the Colts, Joe Thuney of the Chiefs, and Joel Bitonio of the Cleveland Browns. That rounds out your top 5 on that list. But again, Lindstrom coming in at number 2.
Yeah, I think he's top 10. I don't think he's 2. I think Joe Tony's ahead of him. Quentin Nelson had a good bounce back year. I think Joe Bitonio is ahead of him as well. Obviously, Zach Martin. The interesting part to me was is he was ranked as high as 1 by the people interviewed. And as low as not in the top 10.
7, as low as. Well, actually, it says.
Right? Well, that was last year's
was
ranking
last
was
year's
7.
Ranking was
His
7.
Lowest ranking was he wasn't in the top 10. That means That means someone watched the Derrick Brown film and was like, this isn't a top guard in the league. And that's unfair because Derrick Brown's one of the best interior defensive linemen.
Does that to a lot of people, yes.
But that's. I don't know.
Here's what I will say. I firmly believe that. And he's sandwiched between Zach Martin and Quentin Nelson. Firmly believe both those guys are first ballot Hall of Famers. I don't know that Chris Lindstrom is to that point just yet for me. And I think, and we've talked about this before, I am curious to see how he reacts to a little bit different offense that he will be asked to run this year. I do think at points he will be asked to pull. I do think he will be asked to pull on A-gap plays. I don't think it's a ton. You're not doing some, you know, the counter plays and some of the other things that you do in some of these offenses throughout the NFL, like the Eagles and Landon Dickerson and other things. But he will be asked to do things differently than he's done in his entire career, and I hope that he's able to adjust that well. I do, to your point, I do think he's a top 10 guard. 2, and putting him in front of Quentin Nelson and all the way back to Joel Bitonio, who is a Jesse. I'm not sure I'm right on board with that.
Is pulling something? I actually think pulling will be good for him. He's more agile guy. He's a smaller guy than some of the guards in the league. I think pulling won't be an issue for him. What I worry about is some of the pass protections, the pass sets, where he is gonna, you know, because if you're gonna be, even if you're balanced this year, I think, and now he's obviously done it before. But I think that would be a more of a – that's just my thought. I didn't play offensive line in the league, though.
It's a good point. He should be very, very good at pulling. But it's not as easy as just being athletic and getting in somebody's way. You have to have a certain mindset to do that. And I think that he will, but it will be different than anything he's ever done. I will say this about the pass protection, watching what the Rams do, a lot of play action similar to what Arthur Smith does, but a lot of play action out of the shotgun as opposed to under, which I think will help him out a little bit and help out the tackles as well.
This from ESPN, Minnesota Vikings wide receiver Jordan Addison was arrested Friday near Los Angeles International Airport on suspicion of driving under the influence. This is what the California Highway Patrol said Sunday night. So according to a police report reviewed by ESPN, an officer found a white Rolls Royce blocking a lane of 105 westbound on Sepulveda Boulevard northbound. I should know how to say that. I've been out in L.A. A lot. But anyway, the driver later identified as Addison was asleep behind the wheel, according to the report. So police have not made public Addison's blood alcohol content yet. The legal limit in California is 0.008, and the Vikings are aware of the arrests. And this and some sad news here. Jacoby Jones, who scored the 2 touchdowns in the Ravens' Super Bowl win, he died at the age of 40, and this is a really sad story here. So the cause of death was not immediately available, but in a statement released Sunday night through the NFL Players Association, the Jones family said that he died peacefully at his home in New Orleans. Again, at just 40 years old, his family, including his mother, Emily, and his son, Jacoby, are together and asking for prayers, privacy, and support as they navigate a difficult time. The Ravens had this to say in a statement. that Jacoby had the unique ability to connect with everyone he encountered. His charisma, joy, and love created a one-of-a-kind presence that could light up any room and brighten any dark day.
There are just certain people when their names come across your phone that they've passed that jump out at you and make you sick to your stomach, and he is one of those guys. And he was obviously electric as a football player, but just turned 40, and you never want to see that happen to anybody, much less a guy that was known to be that kind.
Really sad there. Thoughts and prayers are with his family. We, this hour, brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. We got him mic'd up.
We got mic'd up coming up. We'll talk about the Braves before mic'd up a little bit, get back to their weekend series, and they're heading to the All-Star break. But Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter! I'm coming for you, big dog. I got issues. All right, we'll talk about that next. Coming up on Mic'd Up, Sports Radio, 929 The Game.
Mornings on The Game means more of the morning shift.
Nice! Nice!
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hits it in the air to left center field. Going back is Merrill. He's still going. And it's gone! Darno delivers a three-run bomb. 5-1 Atlanta.
Travis Darno coming up big for the Braves. That call courtesy of Brandon Godden and Valley Sports as Atlanta beats the San Diego Padres 6-3 on Sunday in the final game before the All-Star break. They took 2 of 3 in the series.
You'll have to refresh me. I was on vacation, but Travis Darno started Friday as well, if I'm not mistaken. I think he started 2 of the 3 games this weekend. And obviously, I think Snicker at this point trying anything as we come closer to the break to jumpstart the offense. I don't know that that had everything to do with it, but obviously he has been very, very good as a second option catcher, even with Sean Murphy back and doing all the right things. So, there was a point this weekend, I can't recall which game because, like I said, I was kind of in and out on it, where Travis Darno hit a grounder to the right side with a runner on third. And I just almost had a tear in my eye, man. It's not small ball, but it's playing baseball the right way, and it's doing things the right way, and it's understanding situational baseball. Adam Duvall had another instance like that as well, of these guys just trying to piece things together and moving runners over and taking the extra base. And you mentioned earlier Lil D with the stolen base too, which I think is it's huge, man. You don't have Ronnie anymore to steal all those bases.
Yeah, you've just been bad at the plate. I think Grant had the tweet yesterday that essentially Matt Olson's given you like an RBI week over the last month, which, and then he literally the next inning, Grant tweeted it, and then the next inning Matt Olson had an RBI single that was one that tied the game. Ozzie had a good day yesterday. Yeah, in the offense, there's just no consistency, but you don't know where to pinpoint it. Kelnick was really good to start. When he got in that leadoff spot, he's cooled off a little bit. I still think he needs to stay there. But there's been the one constant has been Ozuna, and Riley has been good of late. But this team is where it's at 53-42, 4 games up in the wild card because of starting pitching. And that's why they have 3 all-stars going from the rotation, the starting pitching rotation alone, going to the All-Star game. That's great. It's awesome to hear. We know we won't see Cell. I think Max Fried might be the first time he actually gets to pitch in an All-Star game because he hasn't gotten to pitch before the way it's worked out. And then you got Ronaldo Lopez, who will probably get to throw an inning as well. That'll be a session for him since he pitched Saturday. He had probably his worst outing on Saturday against the Padres. But look, they're in a good spot because everything is still in front of them.
You mentioned Chris Sale, who did give up 1 run and 4 hits, but he has won 4 of his last 6 starts. And again, he's an all-star, but we won't see him pitch in the all-star game. But
yeah, I was really impressed by him. Obviously, Schwellenbach, Ronaldo Lopez, to your point, maybe his worst start. I think that's really saying something when you look at how effective he's been. But really, Schwellenbach, with the outing he had, what was that, Friday? Man, it just feels like this rotation, when I think they're about to hit a ceiling, when I think there's about to be fall off, it just doesn't happen. Schwellenbach, just as impressive as could be, and not even like with put-away pitches yet, which we've talked about on this show numerous times, the 2-out pitches have not come natural to him. I think he only got 3 Ks Friday night, but man, he continues to just pound the zone and throw that electric, you know, repertoire that we keep talking about.
And he hasn't had that fifth inning blow up like he did in much of his starts. He's that's happened to him before. He hasn't had that. His last 2 outings, he's thrown what 12 innings and given up 2 earned runs against the Phillies and the Padres. And whether the Phillies had Harper and Real Muto and Schwarber lineup or not, it's still a top-tier lineup. And so that's impressive to see what he's done.
It is, and Atlanta has won 6 of their last 9 games now headed into the All-Star break.
All right, guys. Let's hit a mic, though.
It's time to rant.
Excuse me?
It's time to rage.
It's time for Mic'd Up
on the Morning Shift.
Travis Hunter. No, you didn't. Oh, you guys know me. And you know, there's one thing I can't deal with. It's the O-line hate. One of the first 2 weeks we were on the show, I thought I was going to climb across this table and headbutt Bo and his Ryan Blaney hat, but I didn't do it. But you guys know how I feel about the offensive line. You don't attack the offensive line.
Yeah, you're overly sensitive when the truth is told at times. Yeah, it's okay.
I am overly sensitive about offensive linemen. That is true. I wouldn't say that when the truth is told. I'd say that when you have bad, uneducated opinions about the offensive line, yes, I get irritated. That is true. Mm-hmm. So here's what happened.
Everyone has their truth.
Here's what happened. Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter are playing College Football 25, all right, from EA Sports, which has had really the video game world a buzz. We haven't seen one in 10 years, I believe. This is the first one that's come out. And now that players are getting paid and all the above, they're able to release the game. Well, they're doing a live stream, all right? And there are people that are watching this live stream, and they're able to come at these guys with questions. Now, Shedeur and Travis Hunter are both ranked, I think, in probably the top 30 players of college football on this game. All right, but people are kind of live streaming questions to these two as they are playing against one another in this game. And here's what happened.
Why am I getting chased by him?
There we go.
How? The O-line is realistic. Yes, very realistic.
What do you mean?
Can't block for nothing.
Yeah. So what you hear is Shedeur Sanders saying, what you mean, and Travis Hunter saying they can't block for nothing. Guys.
Is he wrong, though? I mean, Shedeur Sanders was the most sacked quarterback in D1 last year. And, you know, Travis Hunter does play some offense, so he would know, too.
Now.
Can't block for nothing.
Here's what I'm going to ask you. How long does Shedeur Sanders hold the ball?
Hey, man, he plays within the system.
Is that what it is?
He's
just playing instinctually. Now, Shedeur,
no, I didn't say that. I said he plays within the system.
Is that what it is? Well, in the system is, hey, I'm going to hold it for 5 seconds?
Well, it's also we got to throw it 70 times because we're down as well. We're losing a lot of games. So
Shedeur Sanders came out and said, look, this was talking about last year. Essentially saying that he was talking about last year's offensive line and we've replaced all of them, which I don't know that it makes it sound any better for him.
I think that makes it sound worse.
I know, right? He's like, yeah, I mean, those guys were trash, but they're all gone. We got 12 new offensive linemen out of the transfer portal and signing.
Hold on. Can I go to a deeper question real quick before you finish your point? How long can you continue to just replace 30 to 40 players every year? And what does that say about the program?
I think it says they have deep pockets at this point in time, right? I mean, when you look at Ole Miss, Florida State, and all the above, right?
But yeah. I'm talking about the environment, though. If you're replacing players, that many players, because that makes it to me sound like there's some kind of disconnect.
Yeah, I would think that's what it sounds like. But also, you don't come out and say things about your teammates like that, regardless if it was true, whether or not, regardless of if they're there. It's not a good look, I would say, at all. But I guess those guys are gone now, so it doesn't matter, right?
No, it does matter, because guess what?
Sarcasm.
My thing with the whole thing is there's going to be a point in time. Travis Hunter, look, Colin Till, incredibly gifted athlete, right? Plays both ways. I mean, one of the great stars of college football. There will come a day when things even out for him, right? And he will get chopped up by a wide receiver in the NFL or wherever it may be, and he's going to look bad, right? And I hope one of those offensive linemen that he's talking about from last year highlight that video, retweet it, talk about how trash he is, and do all the above, because that's what I feel like he's opened himself up to.
Well, I also think that he'll be asked about this come late February.
Yeah, well.
At the combine.
I'm sure.
So you care about your teammates? Yeah, man, I love my teammates. Really? Well, Why'd you call them trash?
Frustrated.
They don't play there no more. Yeah, but they were your teammates at one point in time.
And they were, yeah, exactly. They were on the same floor as you.
And look, I think he's a hell of a player. In fact, I think he probably will be the best player that comes out of the draft this year. However, you know what else I've seen from him? Temper tantrums on the sideline. That'll be brought up as well. Now, it's competitiveness, but you've got to be able to keep your cool in certain situations because it will be used against you.
The wake-up call is coming up. You can call us at 404-726-0929. Maybe you want to weigh in on Mic'd Up and what Travis Hunter had to say, calling out what appears to be former teammates on that line. You can do that or anything you like. Wake-up call is next here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Mornings on The Game means more of the Morning Shift.
Nice.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hits it in the air to left center field. Going back is Merrill. He's still going. And it's gone. Darno delivers a three-run bomb. 5-1 Atlanta.
Travis Darno coming up big for the Braves. That call courtesy of Brandon Godden and Valley Sports as Atlanta beats the San Diego Padres 6-3 on Sunday in the final game before the All-Star break. They took 2 of 3 in the series.
You'll have to refresh me. I was on vacation, but Travis Darno started Friday as well, if I'm not mistaken. I think he started 2 of 3 games this weekend. And obviously, I think Snicker at this point trying anything as we come closer to the break to jumpstart the offense. I don't know that that had everything to do with it, but obviously he has been very, very good as a second option catcher, even with Sean Murphy back and doing all the right things. So, listen, there was a point this weekend, I can't recall which game, because like I said, I was kind of in and out on it, where Travis Darno hit a grounder to the right side with a runner on third. And I just almost had a tear in my eye, man. It's not small ball, but it's playing baseball the right way, and it's doing things the right way, and it's understanding situational baseball. Adam Duvall had another instance like that as well, of these guys just trying to piece things together and moving runners over and taking the extra base. And you mentioned earlier Lil D with the stolen base too, which I think is it's huge, man. You don't have Ronnie anymore to steal all those bases.
Yeah, you've just been bad at the plate. I think Grant had the tweet yesterday that essentially Matt Olson's given you like an RBI week over the last month, which and then he literally the next inning, Grant tweeted it, and then the next inning Matt Olson had an RBI single that was one that tied the game. Ozzy had a good day yesterday. Yeah, in the offenses there's just no consistency, but you don't know where to pinpoint it. Kelnick was really good to start. When he got in that leadoff spot, he's cooled off a little bit. I still think he needs to stay there. But there's been the one constant has been Ozuna, and Riley has been good of late. But this team is where it's at 53-42, 4 games up in the wild card because of starting pitching. And that's why they have 3 all-stars going from the rotation, the starting pitching rotation alone, going to the All-Star game. That's great. It's awesome to hear. We know we won't see Cell. I think Max Fried might be the first time he actually gets to pitch in an All-Star game because he hasn't gotten to pitch before the way it's worked out. And then you got Ronaldo Lopez, who will probably get to throw an inning as well. That'll be a session for him since he pitched Saturday. He had probably his worst outing on Saturday against the Padres. But look, they're in a good spot because everything is still in front of them.
You mentioned Chris Sale, who did give up 1 run and 4 hits, but he has won 4 of his last 6 starts. And again, he's an all-star, but we won't see him pitch in the all-star game. But
yeah. I was really impressed by him. Obviously, Schwellenbach, Ronaldo Lopez, to your point, maybe his worst start. I think that's really saying something when you look at how effective he's been. But really, Schwellenbach, with the outing he had, what was that, Friday? Man, it just feels like this rotation, when I think they're about to hit a ceiling, when I think there's about to be fall off, it just doesn't happen. Schwellenbach, just as impressive as could be, and not even like with put-away pitches yet, which we've talked about on this show numerous times, the 2-out pitches have not come natural to him. I think he only got 3 Ks Friday night, but man, he continues to just pound the zone and throw that electric, repertoire that we keep talking about.
And he hasn't had that fifth inning blow up like he did in much of his starts. He's that's happened to him before. He hasn't had that. His last two outings, he's thrown 12 innings and given up two earned runs against the Phillies and the Padres. And whether the Phillies had Harper and Real Muto and Schwarber lineup or not, it's still a top tier lineup. And so that's impressive to see what he's done.
It is, and Atlanta has won 6 of their last 9 games now headed into the All-Star break.
All right, guys, let's hit a mic though.
It's time to rant.
Excuse me?
It's time to rage.
It's time for Mic'd Up
on the Morning Shift.
Oh, Travis Hunter. No, you didn't. Oh, you guys know me. And you know, there's one thing I can't deal with. It's the O-line hate. One of the first 2 weeks we were on the show, I thought I was going to climb across this table and headbutt Bo and his Ryan Blaney hat, but I didn't do it. But you guys know how I feel about the offensive line. You don't attack the offensive line.
Yeah, you're overly sensitive when the truth is told at times. Yeah, it's okay.
I am overly sensitive about offensive linemen. That is true. I wouldn't say that when the truth is told. I'd say that when you have bad, uneducated opinions about the offensive line, yes, I get irritated. That is true. Mm-hmm. So here's what happened.
Everyone has their truth.
Here's what happened. Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter are playing College Football 25, all right, from EA Sports, which has had really the video game world a buzz. We haven't seen one in 10 years, I believe. This is the first one that's come out. And now that players are getting paid and all the above, they're able to release the game. Well, they're doing a live stream, all right? And there are people that are watching this live stream, and they're able to come at these guys with questions. Now, Shedeur and Travis Hunter are both ranked, I think, in probably the top 30 players of college football on this game. All right, but people are kind of live streaming questions to these two as they are playing against one another in this game. And here's what happened.
Why am I getting chased by?
There we go.
How? The O-line is realistic. Yes, very realistic.
What you mean?
Can't block for nothing.
Yeah. So what you hear is Shedeur Sanders saying, what you mean, and Travis Hunter saying they can't block for nothing. Guys?
Is he wrong, though? I mean, Shedeur Sanders was the most sacked quarterback in D1 last year. And, Travis Hunter does play some offense, so he would know, too.
Now,
can't block for nothing.
Here's what I'm going to ask you. How long does Shedeur Sanders hold the ball?
Hey, man, he plays within the system.
Is that what it is? He's
just the
playing instinctually. Now,
I didn't say that. I said he plays within the system.
Is that what it is? Well, in the system is, hey, I'm going to hold it for 5 seconds?
Well, it's also we got to throw it 70 times because we're down as well. We're losing a lot of games. So
Shedeur Sanders came out and said, look, this was talking about last year. Essentially saying that he was talking about last year's offensive line and we've replaced all of them, which – I don't know that it makes it sound any better for him to come out.
I think that makes it sound worse.
I know, right? He's like, yeah, I mean, those guys were trash, but they're all gone. We got 12 new offensive linemen out of the transfer portal and signing.
Hold on. Can I go to a deeper question real quick before you finish your point? How long can you continue to just replace 30 to 40 players every year? And what does that say about the program?
I think it says they have deep pockets at this point in time, right? I mean, when you look at Ole Miss, Florida State, and all the above, right?
But yeah. I'm talking about the environment, though. If you're replacing players, that many players, because that makes it to me sound like there's some kind of disconnect.
Yeah, I would think that's what it sounds like. But also, you don't come out and say things about your teammates like that, regardless if it was true, whether or not, regardless of if they're there. It's not a good look, I would say, at all. But I guess those guys are gone now, so it doesn't matter, right?
No, it does matter, because guess what?
Sarcasm.
My thing with the whole thing is there's going to be a point in time. Travis Hunter, look, Collins Hill, incredibly gifted athlete, right? Plays both ways. I mean, one of the great stars of college football. There will come a day when things even out for him, right? And he will get chopped up by a wide receiver in the NFL or wherever it may be, and he's going to look bad, right? And I hope one of those offensive linemen that he's talking about from last year highlight that video, retweet it, talk about how trash he is, and do all the above, because that's what I feel like he's opened himself up to.
Well, I also think that he'll be asked about this come late February.
Yeah, well.
At the combine.
I'm sure.
So you care about your teammates? Yeah, man, I love my teammates. Really? Well, Why'd you call them trash?
Frustrated.
They don't play there no more. Yeah, but they were your teammates at one point in time.
And they were, yeah, exactly. They were on the same court as you.
And look, I think he's a hell of a player. In fact, I think he probably will be the best player that comes out of the draft this year. However, you know what else I've seen from him? Temper tantrums on the sideline. That'll be brought up as well. Now, it's competitiveness, but you've got to be able to keep your cool in certain situations because it will be used against you.
The wake-up call is coming up. You can call us at 404-726-0929. Maybe you want to weigh in on Mic'd Up and what Travis Hunter had to say, calling out what appears to be former teammates on that line. You can do that or anything you like. Wake-up call is next here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.